The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The October issue of Our State Magazine features articles all about the mountains with the theme Mountain Strong, Healing After Helene, stories of recovery and renewal in the heart of Western North Carolina. The cover photo shows a picture of soft light illuminating the 13.5-mile Tanawha Trail along Grandfather Mountain. It's an unwavering reminder that the sun always rises again. On the menu page, the photo caption reads, "When cool morning air settles in the valley, ethereal golden wet rays wash over the fog that rolls through the Blue Ridge Mountains." The photo shows the rising sun peeking over the Blue Ridge Mountains, and the mountains themselves are deep purple with pinks and lavender showing in the fog below. First up is the welcome message, After the Storm, by the editor of the magazine, Elizabeth Hudson. There was a stretch of days when the phones didn't ring and the messages didn't come and the usual rhythm of our work, the ping of a rider checking in from the mountains, a call from a photographer on the road, the steady word from our distribution center in Asheville's River Arts District, simply stopped. So we waited and waited. We refreshed our inboxes again and again. We stared at weather reports and outage charts and road closure alerts. In Greensboro, at the ramp to Interstate 40, a sign flashed in orange, lights a message that seemed beyond belief. All roads to Western North Carolina closed. In that long, uneasy silence, my mind traveled westward, to Brevard and Boone, to Bryson City and Burnsville, to Asheville and Ashe County, to the Flowering Bridge in Lake Lure, where, for many years, volunteers bent over beds of succulents and roses and even a little garden just for dogs, to the 500 steps at Chimney Rock State Park, each riser carrying you closer to the long view, to that wide open gorge below, to the great house at Biltmore, its windows forever gazing toward Mount Pisgah, gently rolling in the distance. These places have been part of the story of this magazine for decades. They're part of the story of North Carolina. And suddenly, all at once, we could not reach them. For 25 years, our October issue has celebrated the splendor of autumn in the mountains. We photograph it a year ahead, chasing maples, flaring red, oaks blazing gold, ridges glowing orange in the low autumn light. But last fall, after Hurricane Helene tore through and left so much wreckage behind, we found no easy views to frame. Roads washed away, overlooks closed, towns lay under mud. In some places, the only light came from generators, their glare sharp and white against a dark sky. Families grieved losses too great to measure, too deep for words. It was a season of heartbreak felt across the state. And then in the midst of it, a writer in Fairview sent us a photograph. A rainbow lifting itself over the mountains. It wasn't the picture we expected to begin this year's issue with, but it's the image that stayed with us. A fragile band of color, soft and certain, bent across the sky, saying what words could not, that beauty persists, even now, even after. The rainbow didn't erase the sorrow, but it was something. Hope, breaking through the clouds in streaks of red and gold and green. And for us, it was enough to remind us why we keep turning west, why we keep telling these stories, and why we hold tight to the promise that color will return. And now I will take you on a descriptive journey through this month's photo essay entitled Where Fall is Found. From pumpkin patches to main streets, lakes to football fields, autumn calls us to gather in some memory-making places. The first photo is of a red barn with a large replica of a quilt square decorating the end of the barn. The main part of the photo shows orange pumpkins lying on a brown straw, in the foreground of the barn. Paca's Place in Horseshoe, named for matriarch Patricia, known as Paca, Allen Pope, welcomes pumpkin patch visitors starting in September. Cozied into the Blue Ridge Hills, this sixth-generation farm in Henderson County evokes autumnal charm. Stroll the sunlit field beside the red barn to pick heirloom pumpkins and gourds, then fuel up at the food truck or the barn, capital B, capital A, capital R, lowercase n. Linger for live tunes and be sure to say hello to the resident beefalo, a hybrid breed of cattle and bison. In this picture, we show some kids who've turned a retired tractor into a jungle gym while their parents are purchasing seasonal goods at the farm shed. And the grounds around the retired tractor boast all sorts of pumpkins, heirloom pumpkins, ugly pumpkins, round pumpkins, flat pumpkins, white pumpkins, orange pumpkins, green pumpkins, and gourds, all on different levels and all around. Fall is also found at the seashore. Sunset Island Sand Artists at Sunset Beach. Year-round, since 2020, these neighbors have created an open-air gallery of castles, creatures, and seasonal sandy scenes between the town's 14th and 15th Street accesses. But autumn brings cooler days and quieter beaches, offering more time to work and fewer footsteps to disturb the sculptures. Nature pitches in, too. The wind adds texture, while rain reinforces the sand. Some fall days, it's just us and the birds, said artist Stuart Jones. It's a really beautiful time. Residents and visitors alike of all ages enjoy the creations of the Sunset Sand Artists. And on the large page, it looks like a castle that many of the castles in Europe that are built upon a rock have part of the rock exposed and the castle built around it. And that's what this is depicting in this. It's got the various turrets and moat and coming up out of the rock. On the facing page, there's a picture of a man drinking a stein of beer on an overturned, maybe an apple basket or some sort of a bushel basket. And then next to him is a woven basket filled with pumpkins and other produce and such. And you have a collection of the folks who are part of the Sunset Sand Artists, and I'll name them: Joy Ayer, Bobby Hunt, Robin Ilardi, Stuart Jones, Amy Brazana, and Kathy Jones. And pretty interesting. Fall is also found in golden fields. Galberry Corn Maze in Hope Mills. On fall weekends, families at Galberry Corn Maze race, double back, and take photos as they wind through 5 acres of towering green gold sorghum. The sun warms their shoulders between each cool snap of shade. Outside the maze, giggling kids scramble up hay bales, burrow into kernels in the corn shack, and visit the mascot, a donkey named Mr. Hee-Haw. Visitors find plenty of treats at Galberry Corn Maze, including pig races, barrel train rides, and farm animals. And we have that barrel, quote, train ride. It's actually pulled by a four-wheeler and a train of, it looks like water barrels that have been carved out and decorated and with a steering wheel and a comfortable seat for the kids to ride in. And it's riding past a bale of hay with a comical face painted on one side. And in another picture, there's another hay bale painted with a comical face. And then there's the different farm animals. That looks like a llama that a gentleman is feeding. But I don't see a picture of a donkey named Mr. Hee-Haw. Fall is also found under the Friday Night Lights. For many North Carolinians, fall kicks off under the hum of Friday Night Lights. Bundled in layers thick enough to soften the bite of chilled metal bleachers, communities gather amid the scent of popcorn and the rhythm of a marching band to cheer on their hometown heroes, a weekly ritual as dazzling as the season itself. In Walnut Cove, the South Stokes High School marching band performs as its football team takes the field to face their rival, Mount Airy. And we have a close-up, a close-up in the foreground of a trumpet player from the marching band in full regalia with his hat and a feather plume on the top of the hat, gloved up. And then we have the football players running out onto the field. Their gold and maroon jerseys and gold helmets, ready to play ball. Fall is also found amid festival crowds. The North Carolina Fall Festival in Rayford. Though fall festivals no longer mark the end of a literal harvest, the season still stirs a deep-rooted urge to gather and celebrate. What began in the 1980s as a one-day tribute to Hope County's turkey farming industry has since grown into a vibrant week-long tradition. This year, it's October 10th through the 18th that brings neighbors and visitors together in downtown Rayford. Festival highlights include the parade on October 11th and the street festival on October 18th. And you can see one picture shows a giant slide with kids tumbling down the slide and laughing and giggling. And then you have Main Street in front of the Hope County Courthouse and perhaps a church. I see a church steeple behind a tent with closed off to pedestrians and assortment of tents with wares and information and food and all sorts of things. Fall is also found among wagging tails. Halloween in Belmont. Here, fall fashion goes to the dogs. Costumed pups and their people strut through Stowe Park, part of a festive parade and costume contest hosted on October 25th by Downtown Belmont Development Association and Gaston County Animal Care. Friendly lions trot with terriers in tutus, and superheroes bump noses with hot dogs on leashes. With prizes to win, proceeds benefiting local shelters, and treats tucked in pockets, there are plenty of reasons for tails to wag. Lucky may look like a lion, but he's really just one of the pups hoping for a prize in the costume contest. And it looks like they've got like a ruff around his neck that makes him look like the mane of a lion. And he's groomed to that effect as well. There's a little bit of a drone view of the pavilion in the park where at Stowe Park, where the people are gathering with their pups and their costumes. I see one that looks like the pup is a zebra, decorated as a zebra. And in the facing page, you have a gentleman who maybe, you have a dog with a Batman costume on and being held with a gentleman who is in an outfit that is half black and half white, cut right smack down the middle, and one shoe is white and the other shoe is black, and half of his face is actually painted, so he might be the Joker, I don't know. He's got on sunglasses and half of his face is painted white with a menacing looking half grin on one side. Fall is also found on the dusky lake. The pumpkin flotilla at Bond Park in Cary. As twilight falls over Bond Park on October 24th, dozens of jack-o'-lanterns will bob and drift in a flickering flotilla that's towed by a kayak. Carved by community members to have grinning faces, ghostly shapes, and cats in pointed hats, the gourds glow brighter as the sky darkens. And you have on, well, if you want to pitch in a pumpkin into the, for the flotilla, drop your creation off at the park's boathouse on October 23rd. Looks like each pumpkin has its own little floating device. So as it goes out onto the lake and drifts out into the middle of the lake, all lit up, then each one is floating on its own little boat, if you will. And it's actually quite a sight to see. Fall is also found in the autumn sky. Carolina Balloon Fest in Statesville. The sky over Statesville transforms into a kaleidoscope on the third weekend of October as billowing hot air balloons slowly rise and twirl. This 50-year tradition was launched by Bill Meadows, who was trained by balloon pilot and designer Tracy Barnes. Each year, thousands of visitors spread chairs and quilts in an open field to watch skilled pilots wrangle fabric, wicker, and fire at one of the nation's oldest hot air balloon festivals. And on one page, you see Michael Peters and his dad, Joe, as they're watching the flames rise and their balloon begin to lift. It shows a close-up of them in their basket. And there's a couple other folks in there as well. And on the other, the facing page, you have an aerial view of the balloons lifting up and into the air, colorful balloons. One is yellow with all sorts of other bright colors at the base. One is rainbow color. A couple of them are rainbow colored flags. Balloons. And different ones that they're rising up over the tree line. The trees are still not changing so much in this photo, and in the distance you see some haze in the background. And then one very good to wrap us up here with this photo essay, a two-page picture of right at sunrise, all of the balloons ready to begin taking flight. They're all still on the ground and testing. They're inflated, but they're waiting for the signal to go. Statesville's three-day Carolina Balloon Fest features hot air balloon competitions, rise and mass ascensions, plus live entertainment, a kids zone, a marketplace, an artisan village, a North Carolina wine garden, and fair food favorites. And that will wrap up our photo essay. Okay, our last storm is part of the healing after Helene, which is the focus of this magazine, of this issue of the magazine. It's called Stronger Than the Storm. In the aftermath of disaster, a family watches the river shift and finds themselves reshaped by resilience, memory, and community. When I first spotted our hellbender, I thought he was dead. I was calf deep in the South Fork of the Mills River, just down the bank from our house, and I caught a glimmer of his slimy back on the bottom of the stream. Had I not been moving slowly with my kids, seeking out skipping stones, I'd have missed him altogether. Nearly 2 feet long, but camouflaged among the rocks mottled in brown. When I bent down, I did so in sadness, expecting to pull up a lifeless, prehistoric-looking creature. But when I stroked his back, his body jerked and he was gone. The eastern hellbender, sometimes called a devil dog or a water dog, is elusive, an aquatic unicorn. I'd only seen one once before, and really, it was a cousin of this one, an Ozark hellbender I'd accidentally snagged while catfishing in Missouri. It was not only the camouflage that makes him hard to spot, they're also particular about where they live. These giant salamanders have lungs, but they spend their lives underwater, literally breathing through their skin, so only streams free of excessive silt and pollution can hold them. They're canaries in the coal mines of small streams in North Carolina in the West, so I knew that finding one below my house meant our stretch of river flowed clear. What I didn't know when I bent down to touch one is that they're also nocturnal. I'd caught him napping. I felt guilty to have aroused him, but grateful to have seen him nonetheless. Hellbenders tend to stick close to one stretch of water, living out their days within a 200-square-meter range. And even when I couldn't see him, as I sat on our deck or stood in the river, I was sure he was out there, tucked under a rock and dozing. But since Helene, I have no idea where he is. The last time I saw him, he was crawling across the road, escaping the receding floodwaters and scattered trees and home appliances and gas cans. I was surveying my flooded house beside the destroyed bridge and carved-up land, staggered by the power of moving water. I scooped up the hellbender, carried him to a small stream, hoping he might find clean water to breathe somewhere and let go. In the days after the flood, one of the first things my neighbors did was build a bridge. The river had lifted dozens upon dozens of whole trees from the national forest upstream and then pinned them to the bridge. Like a monstrous beaver dam, the 50-foot-high logjam pushed the river anywhere but where it had been, tearing the bridge from the land so that it stood disconnected and useless on wobbly legs midstream. This left my neighbors up the mountain with no way out, so we built footbridges to connect us. We knew we'd need each other for whatever came next. For weeks we worked. I tore up everything from the flooded first floor of my house. My neighbors hauled out heaps of wet clothes and muddy dishes and soaked couches to drop in piles in my ruined driveway. Some men tried to cut an old logging road wide enough to get a few trucks over the mountain. Others worked to build a ford in the river to allow linemen and emergency responders access to our land. We tried to figure a way over or around or through the swollen river. Meanwhile, DOT workers perched a backhoe, a track hoe, at the edge of the water and pulled a log at a time from the massive pileup, slowly undoing what had come in a flash. Truck after truck hauled off tons of waterlogged timber, and after a week of constant work, enough had been cleared for the river to finally return to its place, flowing freely beneath the battered bridge instead of around it. But left in its wake were channels and gashes and scars in the land. Into them we dropped dirt and rock, knowing we'd not erase them, but hoping that we might fill enough of what had been taken to reconnect us to the rest of the world. After a couple of weeks, we did. The first truck rolled across the packed-in earth and onto the bridge, and we knew we'd set things a little closer to right. The South Fork of the Mills River, the river below my house, the river that was in my house that changed shapes in the months since Selene. The waters have returned to normal levels, but the bend upstream is a little gentler. The beach near the bridge is gone. The massive rock I like to sit on while searching for the hellbender was carried off somewhere, maybe all the way to Tennessee. The rapids that whisk my kids on tubes past the house have flattened, the water now deeper. Now, this is natural. Streams are always changing, often in small, unseen ways. But after a massive flood like Helene, there is what one hydrologist called a complete reorganization. For the next several decades, this stream will ebb and flow, searching for a dependable shape. It will need to break up fallen trees and regrow bank vegetation. Strangely, it will also need more storms. With new storms and smaller floods, the churning up of debris and the redistribution of sediment will help the stream find its center. This natural cycling of the system, the lifting up and setting down of so much stuff, allows the river to become itself again, to settle in more soundly. Of course, in my search to make sense of the world after Helene, I now imagine all of us as streams. I am a stream. Maybe you're a stream. The whole of Western North Carolina is a stream. We're all churning, searching for channels, setting into our centers as the world shifts, and we're surrounded by debris. I find endless hope in this image. The piling up of brush and rebuilding of walls are not merely tasks to complete, but part of the work to reclaim who we are. We won't be the same as we were, but we will be ourselves again, settled and centered. With our house unlivable, my family of four bounced around for a month or so before relocating to my grandmother's house just before Thanksgiving. The house had been mostly vacant since Grandma passed a decade ago, so we moved what we had saved from our house on the river into the little rock house where I'd spent much of my childhood. We settled our youngest kid in the room where my great-grandmother had lived when I was young. My other kid bunked in the room that had belonged to my dad and his twin brother. It was strange and beautiful, and we were grateful to have a place to be. Then a cold snap hit, and the heat cut out. I tried to think of those streams, about how the coming storms and the never-ending piles of blown-over trees, the insurance delays, the failing furnace, will only help to give us a dependable shape to wash us into fuller versions of ourselves. But it was also cold. I readied the wood stove and called a former high school classmate who had, I heard, had been cutting and splitting fallen trees to sell us firewood. We hadn't spoken in at least a decade, but in 30 minutes his tractor emerged from the tree line across the field, a massive bag of firewood hanging from the pallet forks. Once he dumped and we'd stacked the woods, I tried to pay him. He waved away all my attempts. "We're neighbors," he said. In the years since Helene, I've been trying to wrap my head around the word recovery. Even after all this time, it's easy to find evidence of destruction at every turn. Mangled buildings alongside lives worth of belongings, once green river banks, now more like desert streams. Living in the wake of a natural disaster constantly tests your cup half full perspective. When I set out on back roads, should I focus on the freshly rebuilt house, the blurs of kids on the new swing set out back, or linger on the destroyed trailer downstream, upturned cars still waiting in the grass? I'm a natural optimist, but I'll admit that most days I still struggle to see recovery. I see devastation. I see indescribable wreckage. I see a cup half empty. I see a changed world. But then I remind myself that recovery is not a snapped finger transformation. It's a process, not an event, our friend who works in disaster restoration likes to say. And the truth is, the world has changed. Recovery will never mean a time machine returned to what it was. Instead, recovery means shaping this changed world so it's better tomorrow than it is today. In community centers and libraries and town halls across the mountains, people are meeting to imagine what a recovered version of the region looks like. In Spruce Pine, they meet to envision their riverside park, reconstituted post-flood. In Bat Cave in Girton, a group considers a vision of Hickory Nut Gorge after so much desolation and damage. These pockets of discussions, full of debates and architectural plans and environmental reports, operate within the realization that even once the culverts are replaced and the roads are reopened, there's still work to imagine what a better world might look like. We've not yet come back home to the South Fork of the Mills River, but the work seems endless. But it continues day by day. We will one day return. The fish are back, but I've not spotted a hellbender. Maybe there are none left. Maybe the river isn't ready for them yet. But really, I hope they're doing what they do best, hiding, abiding. Whatever the case, I know I won't stop looking for signs of life amid these ever-moving waters. Well, that sound means our time is up for today. And I hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and they can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired, and broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138, and so long until next time.